Bus Ride by Ligeia Victorio Fruto. Lida watched the blue, shining nose of the bus in fascination. Then she poked a finger at the pert tip of her own pretty nose. It isn't powdered, she thought stupidly. Noses shouldn't be shiny. Never allow your nose to get shiny, said a beauty article, if you intend to hold your man. My nose is seldom shiny, she thought in self-pity, and yet here I am losing my man. Hope that girl in his car will sport a shiny nose sometime today. Lida stamped one foot impatiently. I am beginning to dodder, she thought in a sort of dull rage. Here I am thinking foolish thoughts while a female pirate steals my man away. But perhaps she's just a cousin or a hitherto undiscovered sister-in-law. Even an aunt, she certainly looked old enough to be his mother. She saw the bus toot smaller buses out of the way and slide to a stop. She looked at the quivering nose and dusty side. Then, quickly, almost without thought, she moved close to the bus, her mind made up. I'll take it, she thought with subdued savagery. I won't wait for his car to pick me up. I'll take this bus and rush home and have a really good mad fit. Let him look for me till the balls of his eyes pop out. I won't give him the satisfaction of lying to me. Not just yet. She waited with impatience while several passengers fought to get into the bus. Cattle, she thought with disdain. Creatures of instinct. They won't even file in order. How much time they would save if they spent a little more thought on boarding buses. Once in the bus, she held herself apart from the perspiring crowd. She stood in a small pool of daintiness, which the slightly awed passengers conceded her. She looked aloofly toward a desirable seat by the window, and as though her glance had pulled him up, the blue-shirted man with the bundle who occupied it rose and gave it to her. She moved slowly toward the seat and murmured her thanks. She glanced once at the hard seat in doubt, then stepped by the trouser leg withdrawn to let her pass, and sank upon the cool wood. Once settled in her seat, she looked out of the window, dismissing the bus crowd. The city is different, she decided, from a bus seat. Somehow it looks dirtier, more crowded, more impossible to live in. Through a car window, one could regard it with impersonal disdain. One could hold oneself apart from it, secure from its smells, its sounds, and its dirty humanity. She was beginning to regret having boarded the bus. Quite an experience, but she could have done without it. A car, gleaming, magnificent, flowed by, and she turned her face sharply away from the street. There he was, alone this time, an anxious look framed by the windshield. He would never think of glancing up at the bus window, but she kept her face averted just the same. The hurt she had suffered moments before intensified in a fresh pain. You have done it. You have done it to me. How many more times will you do it before, and after, we get married? She recalled the pleasure on his face as he drove beside the laughing girl. The ghost of a girl's gay laughter was like a clean thrust of sound in the bus's stifling air. She would not stand for it, neither now nor later. And she sat rigidly upon her seat, dumb and proud with pain, doubt like an imp gnawing at her breast. And oddly mixed with her exquisite torture was a streak of annoyance because life could go on about her. Active, noisy life borne upon bus wheels. Behind her someone coughed. She sat straight up with disgust. What right had a man with a cough like that to ride in a public conveyance? The cough was repeated, more rackingly this time, and Lida's irritation expressed itself in a glance of censure flung over her shoulder. He was sick, and not even her glance could summon enough blood to his face to proclaim his embarrassment. This cough is so bothersome, he was impelled to explain to the man who sat beside him. The office doctor says, here an interrupting cough. But I cannot rest now. Wife's having a baby this month. Lida was shocked, speechless. The things people said in buses. There should be a law. Same thing happened to a cousin of mine, another voice took up the subject in heavy sympathy. My cousin took sick when his seventh child was about to be born. Poor fellow, he died 2 days before the birth of the child. Life is so difficult, the first voice sighed, and there was a silence for a while. Other voices, other sounds, drifted to Lyda on the heels of his sigh. It was as though the cough had banished a spell which centered her senses solely on herself. She found her consciousness intruded upon with unwelcome frequency. Across the aisle, a group of laborers discussed their war. Their ignorance was like a needle pricking their earnestness, destroying for Lyda the balloons of thought which they flew with such assurance. Lyda was bored. What did she care about war? Her only resentment was that now her veil must come from New York instead of direct from Paris, as had been originally planned. 2 seats ahead of her, a man was talking to another about unions. What unions, she wondered in irritation. Weddings? I told you long ago that you were crazy not to join the union. The voice was raised to defeat the heavy purrings of the motor. The union is the worker's friend, and a friend in need indeed. In companies like ours, the voice was raised further to drown out the tentative response from another. The union was your lifesaver. You need not worry about another job if you had joined when I told you. Let's take your case now. You were kicked out. There would have been investigations. There was no good reason, the other voice was sullen. The cousin of the foreman had gotten married and needed my job. That's what I mean. Lyda played deaf with an effort. I won't listen to soap opera orators, she thought firmly. I won't. Why don't people leave their miseries at home? Tie them to a post like dogs. Feed them, fondle them once they are home. Why carry them about in places where they will merely annoy people who have troubles enough of their own? And at that thought, a fresh flood of self-pity swept over her. She had not known real misery until she had glimpsed that laughing face and heard that airy sound as his car swept by. Perhaps they had driven out to the hills where he and she had gone so often. They had loved the clean fingers of wind which parted their hair as they drove past green slopes and quiet, blossom-bordered lanes. They had known what it was to laugh in the glare of the sun, and those pools of shade by the roadside where they had paused for lovely moments of talk and silence. Snowy tops of flowering weeds that they had passed again and again. Perhaps he had shown her those. Pain sharpened within her, and she stirred in her seat. A suffocating smell of gasoline mingled with the human odors which circulated within the hot interior of the bus. Lyda moved closer to the window and exposed her face further to the dust-laden breeze that brushed her cheeks. She looked at the houses which they now passed, filled with wonder that people could live in them. She glimpsed mats and blankets, which obviously served as walls, and shuddered at the black dirt, which for so many houses was a littered floor. Across the front of one rusty tin hut, faded strips of bunting still clung, a hangover from a forgotten fiesta, like confetti on the face of dilapidation. The bus gave a sudden jolt, and Lyda heard someone's head bump loudly against the sloping ceiling of the rear end. There was a child's sharp, short scream, and an equally sharp, feminine voice which shushed the scream to a whimper. The man who had coughed behind Lyda rose from his seat and proffered his better place to the woman and her child. The woman looked at his pallid face uncertainly, then, with a murmur of gratitude, transferred herself and her child to the proffered seat. Lyda looked up at the thin length of the man who had offered the seat. He had refused the back seat and stood up to reach for the low beam of the bus ceiling. Lyda thought she saw his slight frame quiver as he sought to steady himself. Then he swayed gently to the rhythm of the motor. Oh, well, she dismissed him scornfully, if he must be gallant. There was a sudden lurch, and Lyda grasped the wood bars of the window to keep from sliding off her seat. She directed an angry glance toward the driver. The fellow had no sense. Why, oh, why did she take the bus? What spirit of folly had prompted her to take the bus when she could have ridden in comfort and safety in a taxi? The long ride home was a monotony of discomfort, thanks to her crazy impulsiveness. She looked about her, thoroughly irritated, and somehow the queer, sick look of the man who swayed close to her heightened this irritation. Served him right, she thought unfeelingly, as she took in the intent, unseeing look upon the almost bloodless face of the man. What on earth could have made him take this evil bus? She hoped savagely that he would not choose this moment to cough. That would be just a little too much. She looked out of the window once more, noting without pleasure the crowded look of the road. Soon they would be on the provincial road, and there would be less noise and dust. She was a fool not to have waited for his car. She could have hailed him as he passed. By this time she would have been safely home and in the bath, while he smoked cigarette after cigarette on the porch and wondered about her icy remoteness. What could she gain with such tomfoolery as this bus ride? Funny into what discomfort love for a man could goad a woman. She imagined the punishments for him while she was punishing herself. She saw a small bus struggling through a tight space between their bus and a large truck, watching its impudence without taking in its significance. Then she felt, rather than heard, the sharp grinding of brakes, and a man's weight flung sharply against her. Weak hands strove vainly to cling to something that would hold him away from the dirty floor of the bus. She moved closer to the corner of her seat, her face pale with nausea and horror, as she gingerly tried to lift the thin body off her knees. "Somebody," she gasps faintly, "somebody help!" The world was all movement and sound. There were the loud, angry words of the driver, the squeals of the women, the indignant voices of the men who had rushed down to examine the trouble. She did not notice when the quarreling voices lost their edge and softened to a shocked pity. She was too stupidly intent on setting her frock to rights and freeing her frame of disgusted shivers. She looked about, pale and helpless, but even the women were not looking at her. They were too intent on the long burden that lately had sprawled against her knee. There were sounds, too many sounds that made no sense to her. This would happen. This would happen to her. So many other women in the bus, and this would happen to her. She felt the last vestiges of her control going. She thought of him and of the girl and of the love like a wounded bird within her. She thought of her beautiful home and her cool garden several minutes away from here. And then she saw her shoes. With a mounting horror, she stared at her once immaculate shoes, only just now beginning to feel the sticky warmth which streaked clear across her feet. She thought, "I'm going to be sick. I mustn't be. Not here. I can't bear it here." But the muscles of her eyes refused to move, and she could not turn her gaze away from those horribly smeared shoes. She felt a fine dam loosening within her, and the tears, long pent, were running down her cheeks. "There is no one," she sobbed bitterly, "no one at all more miserable than I."